to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning and Merry Christmas to everybody. Next time you hear from me, it'll be after the great day. Lots of Christmas vibes out there in every way. Every way. Not like when we were little. Not exactly, right? Some of you remember different types of Christmases, less commercial, perhaps more authentic. But the world turns and we're in the new age. So, Merry Christmas to you all. Freezing this week. I hope your bones are not cold in the morning. If they are, then you're not listening to the show. You should be. So should your friends. We're going to get a little intellectual today. Lab tests. What your lab tests really mean. Everybody gets their lab tests, especially at the beginning of the year. You go for your yearly. You start the year off. You get blood work from your doctor. He tests you in a million different ways. I'm going to do this as the first show of a series because there's just too much to cover. But I think collectively, when I'm done, you'll feel like you can understand the truth versus the fiction. And lab tests you should get, and lab tests from your doctors you should order and trust and listen to. At the same time, there's a lot of interpretation that your doctor may or may not do. There's a lot of lab tests they may or may not order. You got to remember, the way healthcare is working, it's to save the corporation money. What we have in America today, which is fascinating, are a bunch of independent, entrepreneurial labs doing the real testing, while the tests you're getting are basically the standard ones that don't tell you too much. First rule about lab tests, by the time you can see it in your lab test, it's almost too late. Now, that's not across the board a statement, but usually by the time your renal function tests are alarming, by the time your liver function tests are alarming, by the time your various markers in the blood, cancer included, are telling you you have a problem, the problem has been going on for a long, long time. This is like x-rays, which is going to be part of my series. I'm going to do one on the pictures, the x-rays, the CT scans, the bone scans, the MRIs, what they are, what they're not. And human nature loves to pin it on the test. People crack me up. Always they crack me up with that lab test, because that lab test is the standard reality. And that's nonsense. That's not true. That's an ignorance that we want to take care of today on this show, hopefully, at least set you in the right direction. On that piece of paper, you have a clue. That's as good as it gets. And long before it shows up on that piece of paper, you had a problem that could have been detected in other ways. And when you're trying to work your way out of a hole with your liver, with your kidney, with your cancer, with your thyroid problem, so on and so forth, by the time you're trying to work your way out of that hole because you're chronically ill, you can't use the blood test as your month-to-month marker. In other words, you have to do something much more important than getting into the blood test, and that is listening to your body. Where your body's at and not the test is really where the game changes. So right off the bat, first rule, change, shift your perception from the blood test as the absolute marker. Shift your perception from the blood test is really how you determine how you are, how you're doing, how you were, and how you're going to be. Shift it from that to the blood test is just a tool. a tool that you have to factor into the clinical picture. We say the diagnostic test, or the prognostic test, or the test that tells you how you're doing has to be correlated with how your body feels. It's always going to come down to that. Merry Christmas to you. That's the real wisdom here. It comes down to how you feel. And you have to train yourself to listen to how you feel in your body, or the tests are going to drive you crazy. All right, let's get to some of these tests. Now, what I did is, if you check the top of the screen there, you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com, .cc, that's with two T's. If you're driving, I'll remind you not to look at your cell phone and get on the website, but when you get home, give it a crack. If you are at home, please get on your computer. It's so easy to do. Stream the show off the site. That's straighttalk.cc. All right, you've got the show. Show 187. We have 187 hours now, over 3 years broadcasting every single Saturday. I do it every Saturday. One of my favorite parts of the week. What your lab tests really mean, separating truth from fiction. Go to the top of the page, CBC and chemistry panel. There are two tests that are standard. So when you ask the question, what lab tests should I get? The two standard ones is the complete blood count and the chemistry panel. Now, again, for those of you who don't know, for pennies on the dollar, you can order your own tests. Go to Direct Labs, directlabs.com. directlabs.com. Google up self-ordering blood work. You can do it now. No, your insurance isn't going to pay usually. But these tests are cheap. For $100, you can get tons. Blood work is being done cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and just as accurately. There's a big boom in the diagnostic testing field as far as blood work is concerned. Not always, but the CBC and the chemistry panel, anybody can get this test. You go online and order it. Go in, get your blood draw, and have the results sent to you. Easy to do. That's directlabs.com. Later on, I'm going to mention another lab called C as in Charles, M as in Mary, B as in Boy. That's another lab test. It's a specialty lab. One of the tests they do is oxidized cholesterol. Yeah, this test, you do have to get your healthcare provider to order the test through CMB Labs. LabCorp will also order oxidized cholesterol. But the public can do a great deal today going directly to the lab. There's very little that Direct Labs will not test. So this is a big change. You have to understand that. The chemistry panel and the complete blood count. What I did is, with consent, took some of these blood works, and you click the screen and you're going to see just blood work. This is just data, fictitious data. And I want you to read it. And I want you to read it with me, because this is what you get. So this is where we're going to start show number one, and then I'm going to work through this over a period of shows. Within the next month or so, I'm going to have Dr. Aguilar come on, and we're going to do very intense stuff with the teeth. We might do it. We might broadcast it right out of K-Bright live. This is live, but I don't do this generally at K-Bright. But we're probably going to get down there so we can answer questions. So the next 6 weeks, I'm going to split up between, I really want you to understand lab work. Put an end to it. Because there's lots of mythology built into it. Let me give you an example, glucose. So you're looking at the CBC at the top, and you see glucose. And you see that number, 85 milligrams per deciliter. Now, why are they doing that? They want to know if you've got diabetes, if you're approaching diabetes. This test is a joke. It is a nonsense test. It's a waste. Truly. And you see the way we're going to roll here. And why do I say that? Because this is measured fasting in the morning. 9 out of 10 people, if they eat nothing but bagels and donuts for dinner, By the time they get to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock, by the time they sleep through the night, get up at 6, 7, get into the car, don't eat because it's fasting, correct? And then go get the test done. That's like 14 hours later. Your blood sugar is going to drop to next to nothing. And this is the point. Why are we using this test as a marker, as a screener for the beginning of diabetes when tons of people running around eating nothing but chocolate cake for dinner are going to show low blood glucose after 14 hours of not eating food? So why are we doing this test? And you get my point. On top of which, excuse me, there's something called the Cori cycle. And the Cori cycle is when your lactic acid in the wee morning hours gets converted to glucose, which is why your glucose goes up late at night. So the notion that between the Cori cycle and not eating for 14, 16 hours, you're going to get some sort of sensitivity to whether or not you're developing diabetes is almost a waste of time then. Yeah, if your blood glucose is high in the morning, 110, 120, there's something really bad going on, and you have to take care of that. Believe me, by the time it is, you'll know it. This is a terrible marker. What you want is the glucose tolerance test. That's what they ought to be doing. That should be standard. But you know what? They won't do it, and they won't do it because, well, they're not thinking ahead. So that's a big, big boo-boo right there. But the other reason they're not going to do it is because it's just not cost-effective. It's a test that costs too much money for the corporation to do. Here's the solution. Go off that page and just look at picture number three. Picture number three. There it is. That's your AccuCheck. Take your own blood glucose. Very, very simple to do. You simply go to the drugstore, buy the kit. Picture four, I put a nice picture of the kit. Prick your finger. Take out of that little vial, that little plastic vial that I've displayed on picture number four, take that little plastic strip out, that little strip, and stick it in. You can see this on picture three. So we're going back between three and four. Look at picture three, that little strip stuck into the glucose meter, and there's your read, 106 milligrams per deciliter. So what you do is get the AccuCheck. They're inexpensive. Learn to use it. Go out and have yourself a 90-minute party with sugary, greasy foods. Pancakes and waffles and ice cream and Coca-Cola, and test yourself. This is where the rubber hits the road. It's the glucose tolerance test. You can do at home. You're going to do it at home over the holidays. You're going to party over the holidays. That's part of what the holidays are about. So enjoy yourself. Take the meter and see, after you stuff yourself good for a good hour, 90 minutes, 1 hour after the meal, take your blood sugar. Chart that down. 2 hours, chart that down. After an hour, if you're far away from diabetes, no matter what you do, no matter what you eat, after an hour, your blood glucose should be about 100, 90, 80. At 2 hours, it better be. But if you see an hour after the meal, that big 1,500, 2,000 calorie, sugary, carby, fatty meal, if you see that blood glucose up at 200, 250, 300, and it takes you 5 hours to get it back, you've got, at least on the low end, you've got the beginning of type 2 diabetes. You've got to catch this. You can live like this for years, and it will never show up in your yearly physical blood glucose test. It's called the glucose tolerance test. You can do it very, very inexpensively on your own. So what are they making such a big to-do about that CBC blood glucose? You see, there's the myth of it. Now, yeah, if you do that test and your morning blood glucose is 120, well, okay, we can say the test was worthwhile, but that's not really what it's about, is it? It's about getting it long before that blood glucose gets to 120 in the morning. By the time you've got somebody whose rising glucose is that high, that problem's been going on 30 years. You can catch a 20-year-old already showing markers for insulin resistance. And you can check my shows out on insulin and diabetes and what to do about it and the rest of it. It's just so fixable. So you got your CBC, and you're getting a deeper insight into what we mean by glucose. Let's get to uric acid. Let's get to the blood's nitrogen, urea and nitrogen. Let's get to creatinine. Let's get to the glomerular filtration rate, the next four on that CBC. So this person had a CBC done, and we're reading it, just like you're going to read yours. Now, uric acid, BUN, and creatinine are metabolites. They are breakdown products from protein metabolism. They are breakdown products from the meat you eat. They are breakdown products from the muscles you use to move your body and to live, and the metabolites or the excretions of those muscle cells. So that, in a loose sense, is what you're measuring. But what the kidney is supposed to do is clear these. They're supposed to get rid because these things are poisonous. So your body makes poisons. We always think of poisons as from the outside. Wrong. The real poisons are on the inside. Endogenous. E-N-D. Endogenous. Not exogenous. Two different words. Endogenous, meaning we make the creatinine. We make the urate, which becomes uric acid. Our bodies make this stuff. They're excretions. It's what you urinate out through the kidney. So, when we start seeing the uric acid rise, when we start seeing the urea rise, when we start seeing the creatinine rise, where do we end up? We end up wondering why they're rising. And one of the reasons where they may be rising is because your kidneys are getting sluggish. Far bigger problem than when your liver gets sluggish. The liver, remember, the liver's a workhorse. You can beat that thing. Beat it with a stick. Kick it down the street. The liver is made to take a beating. And it does. Believe me. You beat your liver to death. The kidneys are finicky. The kidneys are precocious. The kidneys are not made to take beatings. So this is something you want to be on top of. So I want to, for a couple of minutes, go into a little bit of the anatomy and physiology of the kidney. All right? I want to break it down into two simple component parts. And so the first picture I want you to take a look at is picture number 10. Blow it up nicely. Again, that's Control Plus. On your screen, just do the good old Control Plus, get it bigger, take a nice look at it. All right, great. That picture there is a nephron. Each individual, you see that square there, that superimposed square, they drew a black rectangle into the kidney. Kidneys are small, they're about 3 inches long, a little less even. They're really small. The liver is humongous. You could probably fit 100 kidneys into the liver. The liver's big. Kidneys are very small. The liver regenerates way better than the kidney. So that's a nephron. A nephron is the individual unit of excretion. And what this picture does is blow up the nephron. So on the left is the kidney squared off to the nephron. On the right is the nephron blown up. And you see the glomerulus. And then you see the tubule. I want you to know those words. Nephron. Repeat after me. No, don't do that. Glomerulus. Tubule. Kidney glomerulus tubule. Perfect. Glomerulus. That is a bunch of little microcapillaries. And those capillaries in the kidney are interspersed with another part of the kidney, the podocyte, which we didn't write down, that wraps itself around the glomerulus and takes out all the stuff in the blood. Takes out water, blood, all the garbage in the blood. What's the idea here? The idea is the creatinine, the uric acid, the ammonia, the nitrogen, all these different endogenous excretions that the skin will also excrete. Remember, the skin is the third kidney. Did you dry brush it today? Did you sauna, sweat, and dry brush? Did you clay sauna, sweat, and dry brush? Are you having problems with your kidneys? Is your ability to excrete through the kidney, is it being really met by the demands you place in your blood? Getting psyched here. Fascinating. Yeah, I'm going to do this in 3-4 parts. It's going to be like a volume, a 4-part volume. I just want to take the mayhem out of this. I'm so tired of people putting their blood work as the determining entity. It all revolves around that blood test. This is nonsense. But you do have to understand it, and you do have to take joy in understanding it, because it's you. So that glomerulus, it's a blood supply to the kidney that's pulling lots of garbage out of the kidney that your body makes, water-soluble. So it doesn't pull the fatty stuff out of your blood, like the cholesterol and the pesticides. Not really. The kidney takes the water-soluble. The glomerulus takes the water-soluble garbage. So we have creatinine, urea, and what we call BUN, which is just urea, nitrogen. And it goes through this glomerulus. And also going out of the blood are all your minerals. If you take, in any given moment of the day, a bunch of minerals, I mean food or minerals, or some supplement with minerals, you don't know, you got to get this one, you don't know what the balance of that is. This is another nonsense. It's just nonsense to think that our bodies, well, let me put it to you this way. It's nonsense to think we've got an insight into each and every individual at each and every part of the day, in each and every part of your life, to tell us what the ratio of minerals should be in any given moment. And this is what nutrition holistically tries to do. It does hair analysis. It's got all sorts of blood tests with ranges to tell us just what should be the amount of chloride, of phosphorus, of magnesium, of sodium, of potassium that we should be taking every single day to ensure ourselves optimal health. We shouldn't have too much and we shouldn't have too little. Here's the bottom line, and it relates to blood tests. The minute you have too much mineral, your body will excrete it. So if you don't know how much you need and you take too much, calcium, for instance. Now there's one that confuses everybody. How much calcium do you need in a day? Is it 1,200 milligrams? Is it 16? Is it 24? Is it 32? Is it seasonal? Is it age-related? Is it exercise-related? Is it stress-related? This stuff can get confusing. And the bottom line is, if you've got more, which most Americans do, because we like to stuff our faces, and if you're a supplementer, believe me, you're running around with 50 times as much mineral as you need on a daily basis. If you really study what these supplements provide and you're into all these superfoods and the rest of it, you're getting way more than what your body's supposed to use. I'll guarantee you that. No big deal. No sweat. Why? Because the glomerulus passes it from its blood supply into the kidney. And once it goes into the kidney, it goes to the tubule. The kidney is the glomerulus and the tubule. The glomerulus is this capillary supply that filters into the kidney through the podocyte. And then the nephron takes this blood with water in it, and it excretes, but it also takes back a certain amount of that mineral. The kidney regulates your minerals. That's what you have to understand. The tubule of the kidney, the renal tubule of the kidney, regulates your minerals. The glomerulus also regulates what's supposed to filter out of the blood and stay in the blood. What's supposed to come out of the blood and stay in the blood. You're not supposed to take albumin out of your blood. You're not supposed to take sugar out of your blood. There should be no glucose in your urine. There should not be protein in your urine. The urine should be sterile with no WBCs. So the kidney's deciding on the sterility of the urine as far as infection is concerned. The kidney's deciding your mineral balance, and that's mediated through the glomerulus and the tubule. When you have kidney problems, they're going to be in the glomerulus or in the tubule. And they each suffer from different parts, and I'm not going to get into that today. Now, when the kidney gets too sluggish, you're going to go back to that CBC again and chem panel, and you're going to look at the GFR. That GFR says EGFR. If you're not African, generally, that's going to mean if you're Caucasian, if you're Asian, you're going to have greater than 59 as the number, milliliters per minute, or 1.73 milliliters per minute of blood filtering through the kidney. And they'll attach a number to that, and that number has to be greater than 59. So if you're looking at that lab work right now, that number 63 is telling you that that person's kidneys are okay. And as long as it's greater than 59, they're filtering out enough blood. Filtering out what in the blood? The BUN, the creatinine, the uric acid, and all the other stuff we don't bother measuring because that other stuff is exogenous. In other words, the chemicals that we inhaled or the garbage we ate in our food is also being excreted through the urine. The drug residues are being excreted through the urine. And when those kidneys slow down, the GFR drops. So we use GFR, the glomerular filtration rate, the amount of blood that the kidney can actually filter per unit time. And that's a critical marker that you want to have a sense of, because at some point, for a ton of people, for a ton of different reasons, that GFR starts to drop. And we don't call this renal failure until it gets into the 40s, into the 30s, into the 20s, and then we're on dialysis. So we're just going through the old CBC. And the first thing we're looking at is the serum glucose, which we're poking a hole in. The second thing we're looking at is the markers for renal function. And if we see the BUN, the creatinine, the uric acid go up, it means the kidney's not working fast enough. By the time you have problems there, by the time you have problems with the uric acid, the creatinine, the BUN, the kidney's already damaged. What you really want to look at is the GFR. And a lot of times they don't test the GFR. The filtration rate is not the normal part of the CBC. I will guarantee you, if you look at your blood work each year, they don't take it. So we're doing myths, right? These are the problems with blood work. And here's another one. Your standard blood work each year does not measure your GFR, your glomerular filtration rate. That is absurd. Why? Because let's say your number's 70 and it drops to 60 twice in the same year. It's at 60. Something's wrong. Now, at 60, it's still normal. Or let's say yours is up at 97. Let's say yours is anywhere between 75 and 90. And then you hit age 60, and it's down at 70. And then you hit 65, and it's down at 65. And you can see a downward trend. That is significant. Now, let me put a couple of things together to show you how we can get interesting here. Let's say they're telling you, check this out. Let's say they're telling you that every year your blood glucose looks great, Jack. Your morning fasting glucose, even though you ate everything in sight off the kitchen table at 6 p.m. the night before, 16 hours later at 10 a.m., after 7 good hours of sleep, your blood glucose is 85. And so, no way, you're fine. You're just fine, Jack. But really, if he did the glucose tolerance test, he'd find out that 1 hour after dinner, his blood sugar was 300. Yes, you can easily have blood sugar at 300 and get up the next morning, and by the time you get to the test, your glucose is 85. So let's say for most of the day, because of the way Jack eats, his blood glucose is way up high. It's 150 all day long. But when we test it, it's 85. And let's say his GFR when he was 40 was 90. And when he was 45, it was 80. And then when he was 50, it was 70. And when he was 60, it was 65. And when he's 68 years old, it was 61. And they're telling him it's greater than 59. See the norm there, right? On the extreme right. This is the GFR. They're telling him he's fine. They're telling him his blood sugar's fine. They're telling him his GFR is fine. And then he hits 70 years old, and all of a sudden his GFR is 45. And now they're telling him you're in the beginning of renal failure. You're on your way to renal disease. And why did I mention this in conjunction with the glucose? Because the first thing type 2 diabetes does is eat out your kidneys. It destroys your glomerulus. Now you see why we're going to do a four-part series. I'm going to create all these scenarios. You will love this. And where do I get it? I get it hot off the press. I get it watching people every single week wake up one morning to bad news that started 30 years ago and nobody catches it. You cannot depend on the medical profession to take care of your health. That's the stark reality. The system is defunct. Any medical doctor over Christmas dinner will tell you that. There are some astounding medical doctors out there. There are some astounding holistic practitioners. But the system is not that good. The frameworks through which the information is transferred between patient, doctor, so on and so forth, client, practitioner, whatever you want to call it, is not working too well. And what you get at 70 is bad news that started when you were 40 and nobody told you. So we're going to put a hole in this game. There's the scenario, and all you have to do is understand it. Take the time to understand it. And that's why I do this show. That's my Christmas gift to you every Saturday. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you need counsel of sorts, call my wonderful office, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007, and bring your lab work. Bring all of it. Bring your records. We'll go through it. We'll analyze it. We'll throw 90% of it in the garbage because 90% of it is garbage. I'm giving you scenarios that depict that. You can't do a superficial interpretation. There's a great book by Roger Williams, Biochemical Individuality. Biochemical Individuality by Roger Williams. The norms are ridiculous also. Just the norms, when they tell you the GFR has to be greater than 59, if you're not African American, so if you're Caucasian, if you're Asian, so on and so forth, it's got to be greater than 59. The point is this. That norm, 20% of the time, this is what Williams, who had his doctorate in chemistry, biochemical individuality, gets the book. It's a great read. 20%, one out of every five variable you test, does not fit the known norm. What they tell you is wrong for you 20% of the time. I mean, just on that statistic alone, if you really take it in, you can't tell. What you can tell is the change in you that becomes alarming. So you have to take your tests, hopefully by the same lab, in a series of tests over years. Then you can really understand what's going on, which means save your lab work. You have to interpret your lab work, another law, relative to prior tests. This is very, very important. Serum sodium, serum potassium, serum chloride, serum calcium, serum phosphorus. Your minerals. Now, they don't do magnesium. That should be on there. They should test an RBC magnesium. They should look for the amount of magnesium you're excreting in your urine. But we're on the minerals now. The minerals in the blood are part of buffer systems. So big rule about the minerals, which what part of the kidney is balancing out? The tubule. Unless the tubule is sclerotic or necrotic, if it's scarred or if it's just falling apart, you're not going to balance your minerals. So if your GFR starts dropping and if you're going into tubular sclerosis, all your mineral balances are going to be really, really cockeyed. You're going to see highs, you're going to see lows. Your potassium could go up. High potassium will give you a ventricular or an atrial fibrillation. It can give you a heart attack. Your heart can stop if your serum potassium goes too high. Your phosphorus. If your phosphorus goes way too high, your parathyroid glands are going to dump tons of calcium out of your bone to balance the phosphorus. And when people go into renal failure, you see, meaning when people can no longer balance their minerals through their tubules because the tubules are dying or becoming scarred. And yes, side note, the arthritis in your fingers, the gout in your toe is the same problem in your renal tubules. The tinnitus from the ringing in your ears. The sclerosis of the cilia in the organ of corti in your ear causing vestibular problems or tinnituses, ringings. Those deposits of uric acid, those deposits of different types of calcium precipitates is actually the same problem that you're having in the tubule of the kidney. A lot of practical information here. Great if you can follow it. Health should be your hobby. Getting your money to make money is a good hobby. Buying real estate and then renting it out to good tenants to pay for itself is a great hobby. Understanding health is a great hobby. Watching soap operas and collecting coins, different story. Health is a wonderful hobby to have because it makes you wealth. You can save yourself so much time, money, and energy if you get the inside track on this. Fascinating to me. The blood is a buffer system. When your minerals get too low, the blood will dissolve bone, and you'll never see the mineral deficiencies. So these CBCs that are done, they're good for acute care, meaning if your serum potassium is super high or your calcium is super low or super high, so on and so forth, well, you'd want to know that, but the fact that it's normal doesn't mean a lot. In other words, a CBC is filled with false positives. A positive means the test is good. You're okay. Glucose, diabetes, you're okay. Uric acid levels, creatinine, GFR, you're okay. Minerals, you're okay. Just move on down the line, check, 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 check. you know what? You got the complete bill of health. You did a CBC and a chem panel. Let me shake your hand. Can't give you a hug. I'm a doctor. But nonetheless, we'll see you next year. Rest easy. You're healthy. This is nonsense. This is nonsense. This is why Direct Labs and these other labs popping up throughout the country, and that's what we love by America. Presently, our Constitution lets us become entrepreneurs. You can see a problem, and you can go out, and you can deliver a solution to the public. And you can do that of every race, color, and creed. And I hope for 2015, we're all ready to protect that. Because we all know something's going on that isn't good. And this is not a conspiratorial statement. Not by any means. It is simply a statement from someone that's just observing what's out there and comparing it to when he was a little boy. And most of you can relate. Whether you come from another country and you're settling in for your first decade, or you've been here for 500 years, you can tell. So your health is one of these subjects and you want to take into your own hands, and you can do that. Or at least you can do it so that you know when you're getting ripped off. If you don't, you don't have to be a doctor. You just have to know enough so you know how not to get ripped off. And that's the key. If you want to own a restaurant, go to chef school, not because you're going to cook, so you know how to not get ripped off by your chef. So on and so forth. So that's directlabs.com. There's your minerals. Now, protein and albumin. Let's talk about albumin and globulin. Albumin and globulin. These are proteins made in the liver. Now, you get a little bit of this from your food, but the liver makes your globulins. Your liver makes your proteins. Let's talk about the liver. To talk about the liver, I want you to look at the pictures. Let's look at picture number. Let's go to Mr. Liver here. Let's go to picture number 16. We'll go to picture number 16. There's Mr. Liver. Why do we want to keep an eye on the liver? And the liver enzymes, SGOT, SGPT, GGTP. These liver enzymes. Oh, my liver enzymes are elevated. Oh. We're going to talk about the liver enzymes, what they mean and what they don't mean. The tests we're doing for the liver don't cut it. Now, there's the price you pay for the stages of alcoholic-induced liver damage. This isn't relevant to you because you're not an alcoholic. You don't even drink, so you don't have to look at this. Except what you have to do is cross out alcoholic-induced and put life-induced. The price you pay for stages of life-induced liver damage. Life induces liver damage. You fixed your car with a car cleaner. You put hairspray on. You put dyes into your hair. You breathe the air in Los Angeles. You get angry and upset at your family, your friends, the world, God. Everything induces liver damage. So this is the price you pay for stages of life-induced liver damage. That's really how we want to term this. And the first thing that happens is your body deposits fat because your liver begins to inflame. So we're back to that inflammation thing again. There is a cell. The cell is working too hard. It gets too hot. It starts to burn, burn, burn. It becomes inflamed. The immune system notes the inflammation, joins the fray, and before we know it, we're having a war on the turf. The adrenals get inflamed. The liver gets inflamed. Every part of your body, if it's working too hard, will get inflamed. That's the way you should think of this. So when you're starting to see these liver enzymes on your CBCs, when you're looking at albumin, globulin, and they're trying to get an essential insight into liver metabolism, understand how unbelievably superficial this is. It's barely worth its print. It's good. You should have it done. But you really have to understand what it's suggestive of. They're trying to get a sense of how and what the inflammatory process is in your body. By the time you've got fat in your liver, it's been inflamed a long time. By the time that liver is fibrotic, which if there's fat in it, it's fibrotic, not cirrhotic. By the time it's cirrhotic, as this says, the liver is irreversible. The damage is irreversible. Let's look at this again. If you've got fat in it, strict abstinence can lead to a full recovery. I don't even want to think of what they're saying abstinence from. I guess they mean booze. Okay, fine. Fatty livers turn around all the time if you work at it. And it's not just alcohol you have to get off. An alcoholic that's got a fatty liver and a big red Rudolph nose is going to have to eliminate a lot of other things, not just the booze. Once that liver goes fibrotic, they're going to say recovery is possible, but scar tissue remains. That's not a bad assessment. Once it gets cirrhotic, you can still turn it around, but it's tough. It's tough. The point is this. When you look at your blood work, they're trying to get a sense of what the inflammation is. So what they're going to do is measure the enzymes. Now go to picture 15. Picture 15, liver function tests and enzymes, serum glutamic pyruvate, transaminase, SGPT or ALT. You'll see that measured back on the panel again in a moment. And there it is. It's specifically associated with liver cells only, and it increases with liver cell inflammation. That's important to understand that word inflammation, because there's another pointer here. This is key. The liver will inflame as the body heals. Now it gets touchy. We're using this as a marker to tell us, say, how much alcohol is inflaming your liver cell, or some poison, or the toxic air, or the toxic water, or your toxic emotions. So we're going to measure this in a chem panel, right? CBC and chem panel. And it's telling us that it goes up when there's too much inflammation, but you got to qualify that. And this is important. A lot of MDs, a lot of doctors miss this. The ALT will go up as the liver heals. Ah, that's a big one. You have to inflame something to heal it. That's a big one. You have to stress something and get it angry and inflame it to heal it. You can't remodel collagen 3 back to collagen 1 and remodel the scar and turn a semi-fibrotic organ or a tendon or a muscle or whatever. You can't reconfigure it back to health, bring the stem cells in, unless you annoy it, and then you'll inflame it. As it relates to the liver, they're using the ALT as a sole marker of damage. They shouldn't. Big mistake. People with Hep C go through this. People that have fatty and fibrotic livers. People with liver cancer. As their bodies start to heal the problem, you'll see the ALT, SGPT go up, and the doctor will say, that's bad. Whatever you're doing is bad. Don't take that reishi, because it's bad. Because even if it goes after the virus, your liver enzymes are going up, and that's not good. That is wrong. That shows very poor understanding of what's actually happening in the healing process. Now, your SGOT, your AST, you see this go up, and either your heart or your brain or your liver are rotting away. By the time this is happening, you know that your heart, your brain, and your liver are rotting away. I assure you, you do. So it's kind of a, well, it's not a nonsense marker. It's not really a nonsense marker, but it's a marker that's less important, because by the time it's happening, your body is in horrid condition already. Now, your SGTT can tell you if you have biliary stasis. Again, it's sort of a nonsense marker. Because once you have biliary stasis, you can't use the SGTT to measure the improvement. It's not really a good way to do it. Whether you're getting bile when you do a flush is a much better way to do it. That symptomatically you're seeing improvement is a much, much better way to do this. So liver function tests, they put them there. On the basis of these three enzymes, really you're looking at the ALT as a reasonable marker. But more often than not, it's reasonable. More often than not, it's reasonable only in the sense that when you're healing, it's going to go up, and that needs to be understood. You need to recognize that it represents a healing if you're in the healing phase. So you're going to find liver not as valuable as markers go, and this is why you don't hear enough about it. Now your albumin, you're going to see the albumin go low very, very often when people are protein deficient. So I want you to go back to those function tests. Now go back to the CBC and the chem panel. Go down until you see albumin. And here you are. You're looking at albumin here. That's on the marker, on the panel that I've submitted. You're looking at the albumin as low. In this particular case, the reason the albumin was low is because this individual was actually in a low grade of renal failure. What was actually happening with this individual in this case is that the kidney couldn't hold its protein because the glomerulus was letting it through because the glomerulus was damaged. And so the albumin was going low. And once the albumin goes low, something happens in the blood vessel. And this has to do with something we call osmosis. So I don't want to get too technical at this point because I think it's a little bit too much to take in on the radio. But I'm going to continue this way for the next 2 to 3 shows because if you take the time to take this down, and again, you're going to have to study this and get to the website and listen to it again. But if you do this, it's not that hard. If you just do it, if you take the time to do it, you'll see that it's just not that difficult to do. Once your albumin gets low, so we're going to give it a shot. Once your albumin gets low, your capillary cannot hold its water. Once the albumin gets low, for different reasons I'm not going to get into today, all the water or the blood plasma will leak out of the capillary and you will start to get edema. Your serum albumin, which is part of your total protein, so catch this because it's big. Your serum albumin, which is part of your total protein, once in fact it starts to get too low, you'll start to get edema. Edema is when you see swelling in the feet. Generally, you're going to see edema in the feet. That's generally where you'll see it. And that reflects something that, okay, now here's the hookup, that your vegetarian sees. Protein deficiency, even with vegetarianism, and a little bit of low-grade renal issue is going to cause that. You see this with geriatrics. Geriatrics start to starve. People that get older get depressed. When they get depressed, they don't eat. When they don't eat, they go protein deficient. Their muscles waste away. They get protein deficient. Their kidneys are getting sluggish anyway. And the combination of it begins to create a fluid buildup because the albumin goes low. Now, it may not go so low that it shines low and flags. It'll go low normal. And again, that's the concept. albumin is telling us just what the total amount of protein in the blood is. And that protein is what prevents edema. Now, the liver's making that albumin, but for the liver to make the albumin, you have to feed it protein. So there's an agreement between your diet and your liver's ability to make albumin that we want to have markers for. Because these deficiencies begin and gradually increase over time. So people can say, I eat enough and be 70 years old, and yet what their body is engineered metabolically to bring in each day in terms of grams of protein, since it's never been monitored, is an absolute mystery when you're 70 years old, 75 years old. And confusion begins because once you see the swelling, you'll think it's kidney. Once you see the swelling, you'll think it's the heart. And I watch this all the time. I have labored here for a moment to put you through some of the fine specifics of blood work because you see this all the time. And from the outsider's view, what it reflects is people don't chart their blood work year by year by year by year, and they can't really measure the number anymore. You just can't come in and take an albumin and not compare it to other years and really understand what the reality is. Now look at that. We've only gone through the first one-third of the test. Okay. Cholesterol. I should probably save cholesterol to next week. This individual, if you scroll down, you're going to see the cholesterol as part of a heart panel. I did a show on cholesterol, so I'm not going to get this, but we're going to break down cholesterol into VDL, VDDL, oxidized cholesterol, labs that actually have this stuff. And you're going to see that what we offer you as a basic LDL, HDL, is very, very far from the reality of the cardiac profile. You can't use cholesterol, HDL, and LDL as a marker. It just isn't giving us reality. And the fact that we've got 50% of our deaths each year to normal cardiac values, in other words, half the deaths each year in terms of heart attacks show normal blood work in the cardiac profile. So we're going to continue this. And Merry Christmas to you. And we're going to have a great 2015. And we'll see you next week. Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.